Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's been 30 years since the Guild Complex came to Chicago. And the first 10 years or so of that was run by the man in studio. He's back in Chicago, Michael Warr.
Good
Michael,
to be here.
It is great to see you, man.
Hey, it's good to see you, man.
It's been a long time.
I really see you as one of those people who helped us do what we do and get the word out there to the world.
Well,
appreciate that.
The Guild Complex and Michael, I've done so much for the poetry scene here in Chicago, and Michael is also the editor of the new book of Poetry and Protest, From Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin. It's a collection of poems from so many prominent African-American writers, just to name a few, Rita Dove, Angela Jackson, Tyamba Jess, a lot of Chicago names, Koresh Ali Lansana, Sonia Sanchez, and many more. This book is really about police brutality and about the issues that are facing African-Americans, African-American community. How did you get involved in this?
Oh, that's interesting. I was actually in Oxford, Mississippi, doing both a poetry reading for my book, The Armageddon of Funk, had just come out. So I was doing a book release party at Oxford. But I was also there as a consultant because I do organizational development consulting, and they were having some real issues with diversity at the time. So here I'm in the midst of this place with these two sides of my world going on, and I get a call from somebody I didn't know, which was Phil Cushman. And Phil had read this anthology by Camille Bundy, I think her name is. I'll have to look that to make sure I get it right. Yeah. She'd done this amazing book on black writers writing about the ecology. And he was so moved by it, he said he wanted to get her to edit this book he had in mind. And he called her and he said, you know, you should talk to Michael Warr.
Right.
You know, so I was out in San Francisco at the time where he lives. We both live there. Got together with him. And we just start working on this book. And, you know, the first 6 months of it was actually me setting up the photo shoots for the poets.
One of the things about this book, you know, because it's a collection of poems, and some of them are new, some of them are old, but the concept really is to shine a light on police brutality. Mm-hmm. But you do it in a way that it's not just about the words on the page. It's not just about the poems. It's about the poets. It's about their bio. You put the photography you're talking about. That was on purpose. This wasn't just, you know, a layout from some publishing company.
Oh, no.
You wanted to highlight the humanity.
Yeah. Well, first of all, there was no publishing company. I mean, this guy decided he was going to put his money into this book, that it was such an issue that needed to be dealt with. I mean, this was in 2013 when we started this, you know, and so there were a lot of things bubbling up. All of it was really well thought out. That's kind of the reason I was brought into it. I basically was a producer of this book with Phil. And it was really important to him that we had these images of the poets. And he's a guy who has, you know, collect rock and roll signatures and sells them and posters and this type of thing. So we had a real connection to that. And he says, well, why can't poets get the same kind of attention that rock stars get? I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But at the core of it, what was happening in the streets at the time, and we went through a couple of renditions of the book. So to tell the story, we wanted to show the poets, and each one of them was asked to write what I called an I statement. Why did you start writing poetry? Why do you continue to write poetry? And how does that relate to this crisis that's going on in the country? And in some instances, I actually wrote their I statement because, you know, a lot of really busy people, but they had the final say and edit on it. But that was a core thing. And if your photograph was not in the book, you couldn't be in the book because that was part of
that
the format.
That was part of the deal. When you talk about poetry and protest, you connect the two. You think of poets in the past, and you say, yeah, they're essentially shining light on things that are happening in current events, and maybe it's about war, or maybe it's about a social issue. When you think about the history of this, and you purposely call it From Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, this has become an issue that for the African-American community, and I would say the American community as a whole, it continues to happen, and it continues, and it's not just racism. It's just this idea that young black men and women are targeted more than other people.
Sure.
So you can really go back in time and see poetry that was done before this, obviously before this anthology, before this compilation, that are writing about the same thing.
Oh yeah, I mean, Colin Kaepernick called it the new lynching, this killing of the unarmed. And when we were putting this book together in 2013, when this was just an idea, almost 35% of the shootings of that year were black people. And so my personal connection is this goes, of course, this was going on way before I was even born. But personally, I was born the same year as that Emmett Till was, you know, was killed. And I have this vivid memory of when I had just graduated from high school in San Francisco. This was a serious issue in the Bay Area. And the Black Panthers were passing papers outside of my high school, and there would be these headlines like, kill the pigs, right? Because there were these shootings going on. And I never forget that I had just graduated from high school, and I was at this bus stop, and I came across this officer with a magnum pulled on this kid who was like just a few years younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I had just graduated from high school, and his hand was shaking. And it's just a vivid image for me. And I kind of talk about in the introduction to this book of wishing for the day when people read about these incidents and they don't even understand it. They're like, how did that happen? Is that real? And so, unfortunately, it's an image that's been with us a long time, as you've said, and I don't see it going away anytime soon.
Well, artistically and creatively, poetry has done such a, I mean, it's been the art form that has been able to reflect and give insight to the human experience. Mm-hmm. And you think about it, that poetry is not going to necessarily fix the ills of the world, but they're going to shine a light, and that light can be pretty bright.
Yeah. Well, that's really important. And that was important to me putting this book together, is that I talk about this in the intro, that this is a tool in a toolbox of many tools. That's the way I want to approach it, that there has to be coordination and collaboration and a kind of interpenetration of all these different streams of reaction to this, and of its protest, but it's also spreading the word. It's also educating. It's also legislating. It's all these different things that have to happen. And one of the ways that's reflected in the book is that Reverend Barber is the last, you know, essay in the book, because he was out in the streets addressing this issue when we were putting this book together.
You know, I always want to say, well, you know, right now, 2019, you're seeing in Chicago, you've got a consent decree. They're reforming the police department after a series of issues, but also the shooting of Laquan McDonald. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lot of heightened awareness, or at least an understanding of what's happening, to the point that society wants it to stop. Yeah. But then I'm like, I feel naive in that regard, because I feel like that probably should have happened in the 60s. It probably did happen. There were marches, and there were, like you mentioned, the Black mm-hmm. Panther movement, mm-hmm. the 70s, 80s, and 90s with Rodney King. I mean, it feels like we've been here before.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, I think we do have to be aware of our naivety in our culture. The things that I was a foreign correspondent in Africa, you know, in my 20s in Ethiopia, and there was a revolution, and there were, you know, like, we don't run into agents typically, or even the military, in our daily lives, but living in a place like that, I was constantly mixing it up with revolutionaries, counter-revolutionaries, agents. The CIA tried to recruit me. The KGB tried to recruit me. I mean, these are things that really go on in the world. So I think that, one, we need to recognize that we do have a degree of naivety, but also disbelief if it doesn't happen to us. And so when this couple was, you know, run up on in Phoenix a couple of weeks ago with their 4-year-old child who had taken a doll out of the store that wasn't even worth $5, these types of incidents, they actually lead to death often. I mean, I have a long poem about this that names the incident, what precipitated it. And most of the time, it's some simple thing that's about nothing, and it escalates into a crime. And so when I saw that incident in Phoenix, one of my first thoughts was, the presidential candidates need to be asked about this. So Buttigieg, you know, he's had to address this issue. And I think it's great that he's having to address it, because it's on the national scale. If it wasn't for him being a presidential candidate,
I don't know if we'd be talking
about it. I mean, first of all, that issue was nothing. It wasn't, the discussion of it was precipitated by something new, but it had happened in the past. It's all about something that happened before.
And even worse, you're in San Francisco on the West Coast, but in Chicago, no one was paying attention to South Bend, and it's right next door.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Michael Warr, my guest, a longtime poet and author and editor, his new book that he helped produce, as we say, of poetry and protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the 30th anniversary of the Guild Complex.
Okay.
Welcome back to Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. My guest in studio, Michael Warr, longtime Chicagoan, who I just found out isn't from Chicago. I always thought you were from here.
Exactly.
And then you
most
went out to
do.
West Coast and you're back, but you're from San Francisco. He is the poetry editor of A Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, the new book that is out now, which sold out its first printing. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. It
Thank
also
you.
Has a corresponding or a ancillary exhibit at the Stony Island Arts Bank, which is on the south side. It's a great place, the Astor Gates place, but there's an exhibit based on the book that's on Stony Island. That's great.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this because I like mixing poetry up, right? I mean, we live in a time where everything can be mixed, right? And so I was deputy director at the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco. And so I have this love for working with museums, and it's very rare, you know, where there is a exhibit of art and photography from a book of poetry.
Right.
So I'm thrilled with this collaboration that the Guild is having with the Rebuild Foundation, you know, and it's really worth seeing, and fortunately it's going to be there throughout the entire summer.
All right, so go check it out there in Stony Island Arts Bank. All right, 30 years to be back in Chicago, just had a bunch of celebrations for the Guild. We had Julie and Andrian talking about Printer's Row. They did the Power Lines 20th
right.
anniversary. For you to look back and celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Guild Complex, what's that mean to you?
You know, you have to kind of say that you got something done, right? Because the mission of the Guild was really about mixing communities, bringing people together under one roof. You know, the whole question of diversity before it became something that everyone was talking about. And I was in a program recently where I was just mentioning how many well-known, established poets have passed through the complex.
Oh my gosh,
and
yeah, right.
You know, some of them Pulitzer Prize winners, many of them doing great things out in the world. You know, a lot of times people connect me to that, and I always say, well, the poets did that. I don't claim any responsibility for that. They did what they had to do to be successful. But what I will claim is that the Guild was paying attention. I made this point that the Guild was born woke, you know, and so it's we did have this impact and continue to have this impact of trying to transform our condition, you know, and that's the way to do that is through the arts connecting people.
You know, it's too cliche to say it gave voice to the voiceless because the poets that you've worked
but
with.
But it's true.
What I love about it is it brought together and continues to bring together poets and writers and creative types from different neighborhoods, different backgrounds, different genres, and different races.
Yeah.
And I feel like that has gone a long way to the idea that diversity is not something that is mandatory, but it's something that it just should be, that makes sense.
Yeah, right? And you have to work at it. This is kind of connected to this thing about naivety, too, is that if you don't do something to make it happen, most of the time it's not going to happen. Because I remember people usually kind of look askance at me because when we were organizing, for instance, the Neutral Turf Poetry Festival at Navy Pier, I would literally count how many women, how many people from this community, from that community, how many people from LGBT. I mean, because you had to do that, otherwise it wasn't going to happen. And then once you start doing it, it becomes more natural, at least within, you know, certain parts of our society where you don't have to be counting those numbers anymore, but somebody has to kick it off by counting.
I always think, Michael, and one of the things, you know, even out of Chicago from 2007, the live lit storytelling scene here in Chicago is blown up beyond what the Guild was doing. But now, I mean, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But you will hear and you get this sense from people that a lot of these storytellers who may put it up on stage in the North Side or maybe out in Logan Square or somewhere else, they're not necessarily concerned about bringing in people from the South Side or bringing in storytellers from the West Side.
Sure.
That there seems to be almost this way that there's these factions or lack of diversity when, you know, it was built on diversity. How do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, first of all, the more the merrier, right? So the thing is that everyone doesn't have to do the same thing. So if you look at diversity from the standpoint of all of those different people that you're referring to and the venues and the organizers is doing something different, that's a form of diversity, right?
Right.
And so if you lose the places that are really kind of committed to that and concentrating on it, first of all, the fact that we have organizations and venues that are doing that naturally, it's kind of built into their DNA, it relieves the need for other organizations to do it. And so that's why collaboration between different institutions is critical. And the Guild is always organized with large institutions. It was organizing with museums. We had my 10th anniversary going away party was at the Historical Society. So, but also organizing with neighborhood groups and that type of thing. So I feel really proud of the fact that we contributed to where that level of interaction between different communities and different art forms exist. And THH Press, you know, which was the publishing wing of the Guild Complex for many years, reflected that in the publishing as well. And you can see things that exist today that are just commonplace that were not if you go back 30 years.
I also think there's similar cities in San Francisco and Chicago in the way that I always thought the Guild Complex introduced me as a young Chicagoan to a world of art and artists and creatives who were doing things that I didn't know were happening. And so events that were happening, whether it be in Wicker Park or on the south side of Chicago, you got to see this stuff and you got to see people expressing themselves. And
up close.
It was inspiring. It was inspiring. Yeah. I would think with San Francisco similar, that as the American city changes and it gentrifies full over, just look at Chicago where we're sitting, all these high rises around our studio are luxury condos and things of that nature. Is there a place for artists and creatives in these big cities? And is there a place for them to be able to afford to inspire people?
Well, there is a need. There's no question about it. Now, San Francisco is a good example because, for instance, the black population has fallen from I don't know, at least 16% at some point to like 4% now. And a lot of creatives who could no longer afford to San Francisco would move to Oakland. And now Oakland has one of the highest rents in the country. So people complain often that the kind of culture that's associated with San Francisco that drew so many people there is dying on the vine. So organizations that are dedicated to maintaining, you know, that diversity are critical, but it is difficult to maintain. So I think that we have to also find new creative ways of sustaining both the artists and the organizations. And so I'm really committed to that. I know I'm no longer the director at the Guild and haven't been since 1999. But when you look at those photographs of the 30 writers to watch, it so succinctly represents the mission of the organization and what we need. We need that mix.
Michael Ward, great to see you, man.
Hey, it's good
always,
to see you.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, the longtime Chicagoan who's back home in San Francisco. He is the poetry editor of Poetry and Protest, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, the book that is out now. It's also a corresponding exhibit at the Stony Island Arts Bank. The book, congratulations, already sold out in its first print.
And reprinted.
And reprinted. Yeah. So there you go. And the 30th anniversary of the Guild Complex. Michael, I can't thank you enough for stopping by.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
Can't wait to have you back.
Great. Thanks.